led us to it.
Thank you very much, James. The question of other methods, which we think are pertinent to this discussion. There is a lot of competition stuff which still needs to be dealt with. I would just pick out and send out the whole question of on-net and off-net billing, or the locking up of the customers between the networks, etc. That if you are on-net, you're offered rates which are far lower than if you're off-net and if you're coming from outside of that network. So it is still an issue. It's a fundamental issue which still has to be regulated, etc. Are we in discussion with the others with respect to this? Yes, we do discuss with the CASA on a regular basis around all of these issues. And we cut at the body, which is required for international regulations. We have, for instance, also discussed with the CASA around the issue of roaming, which the chair actually raised, that the roaming, I think, is an issue for Southern Africa. And actually, the minister and other ministers that adopted the position with respect to SADC around the question of lowering of tariffs and tariff forum. Now, when then we discussed with the CASA, then the CASA indicated to us the limitations which they have in terms of the law of setting up these roaming charges. They need actually then for a broader discussion and the bigger empowerment of the CASA to enter into the thing. So that's of course very moral movement. I think CASA actually indicated that they would also consider this within the Regulatory Association of Southern Africa also. So the discussions are ongoing, and I think even international level with respect to this issue of what to do with this high cost of communication. Now the last part, I think you then asked around the question, Chairperson, of where do we get this? Because I'm asking the colleagues just to address that one to say, where do we get them? Are we painting Vodacom in a red light? Are we considering all of the issues which need to be considered around the question of this crisis?
Responding to that, some of the information, Chair, that has been used in this presentation is stemming from the analysis report by CASA on prepaid retail voice and data tariffs that was from the period of 1 April 2015 to 30 September 2015. I think that's also going to be elaborated in the next presentation by CASA itself. And my broadband one is directly from the website by my broadband chair, where they've done comparative analysis on mobile data prices. That's what we've been able to use, and those were the latest figures that we could receive, and that's what CASA also directed us to look at as well for this presentation. Thank you.
No, we wanted to be sure, because we want to be sure, XNDG, that we're talking to reliable stats here that we can go back and so that everybody knows where the source is if I need to verify the information. Because it's very important that we are clear on what we are using. Just the last round of comments, questions. I noted a hand here. Any other? Okay. At the back, Prof, and then Honorable McKenzie. Those are the three hands.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Andreas Leroux. I'm here on behalf of the TG Murray Trust, the South Africa's largest private foundation. We are advocating for marginalized South Africans. We're also advocating for NGOs, as well as we've made a submission on zero rating mobile data access for public benefit organizations and even government e-services. My first question is around the 2.5%. Based on my calculation, that's 440 rand a month. If you ask me, that's not affordable to most South Africans. That 2.5%, if you take off 17,500 a month, works out to 440 rand, but a lot of South Africans are only earning 3,600 rand a month. That's well over 10% of their salary. So, you know, do we need to, it's affordable 50 rand, 10% of the 2.5%, I would argue. And then doesn't this open the door for zero rating of access for public benefit organizations? And then also that leads into my next question, is this G rates. Is that only for fixed line, or is that they're going to need to be ready for mobile data access as well. So I think that links to ensuring that the marginalized communities that don't have data centers that you primarily access the internet on their phone can actually access the websites of public benefit organizations as well as the e-services of government. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Prof. Gibbons.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to make some comments on the data and just refer to some of the other data that is available that I think answers some of the questions. I know the question from the Honourable Member that's left the room now was around the ITU and the World Economic Forum. I think the WEF Network Readiness Index is highly problematic and the methodologies are highly problematic, but it is one of the international indices that we use and it is indicative of our position relative to other positions. I should say that all of these World Bank and World Economic Forum indices are actually underpinned by the ITU data. So the ITU data, which is very problematic, very out of date for our prepaid mobile environments that move very fast and have enormous methodological problems around the measurement of broadband and how we're measuring subscribers and prices and various things, and which we engage, I sit on the ICT Expert Indicator Forum, we engage with the ITU extensively on. Are nevertheless the ones we are kind of working with. We have been developing over a long period of time alternative indicators. We do still measure the OECD indicators, which are used as international baskets. We use the ITU measures, and then we've also developed some other measures, which we, in discussions with the ITU, believe are providing better measures. So I think it is unfortunate that these benchmarking exercises that are being undertaken nationally across Africa and in the international field aren't being publicly referenced here. In the Research ICT Africa UCT submission, you can find those benchmarks, and you'll see that South Africa's position on the OECD basket remains in the middle range of the African countries that are evaluated, 50 African countries, prepaid mobile prices collected quarterly across now over nearly 5 years. If you look at the 1 gigabyte data, you see that South Africa's position also in benchmarking is remaining in the middle range. But what these policy papers are actually showing, what the methodological engagements with the ICU and others are showing, is that these measures are for mature competitive markets where you have subscribers that you can bill and see how much they're using and what they're doing, etc. In the prepaid mobile market, especially now with public access to Wi-Fi, etc., usage patterns, where people are using the data, is very, very different. And what operators are immediately going to say, and I hope that ICASA's presentation will nuance this debate a lot more, is that those kinds of old measures simply aren't understanding the substitution that's going on in this environment with OTT services, the transitioning from services to voice. And what we really need to do is begin to understand some of the effective pricing, the real prices that people are paying. And operators are quite correctly going to say those figures that you presented on these old static measures simply aren't how people are using data. If you actually look at what we've tried to do is get a value for money, which measures these bundles that have been there, people are actually using a lot of voice substitution with WhatsApp, etc., that make it more affordable. Now, I'm not suggesting that the prices are cost-based or that we should be not looking at effective regulation, and I would argue that the market review is precisely around determining the price and possibly regulating prices, although I would argue that I'd agree that it's not retail prices but wholesale pricing, like we did with mobile termination rate, might require investigation. But just to say that we would please look at the comparatives of the African index, prepaid mobile index, the RAMP index, you can get that sense of benchmarking where we stand, but understand that those measures are really not reflecting what's happening in the market. And if you look at the bundled value index, you'll see that actually Vodacom performs very well in terms of the things that it's offering, some of the packages that it's offering. Many of the operators are performing very, very well. And the last point I want to make is that we cannot only understand the cost factor, we cannot only understand this as a pricing factor on its own. We see that telecoms prices are extraordinarily low. Why are people not moving to that network? Cell C's got enormous packages. Why are people not voting with their feet, these price-sensitive users? because they're able to use these services in very dynamic ways. It's very important that they have access to the network at all times, so they'd rather buy a small bit of value on a network that they know they've got access to and go and use the public Wi-Fi somewhere else. We really just need to get a much more nuanced understanding of how people are using this data. I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Some of the issues now already started to reflect on cuts and cuts.
until you data that is not really, that is a bit problematic. But I think for us it's also something that, because the department participates extensively there, and that research report mainly is what is always all that is being used to say this is where we are and all that. And I think more engagement is needed to be able to say how do we deal with that, because it's an international body that you can't even know. And if they have been using mechanisms that are not reliable to be able to provide us or outdated data, we have to deal with that in order for us to be able to know as a country where we will be going. Thank you very much. Are you ready? Okay, over to you, CEO.
Thank you. Probably the most that the penetration of smartphones and tablets continues to grow. So on this slide share, the key factors to note in terms of the sector overview is firstly that voice revenues that the operators generate, though they remain dominant, are now climbing. And that's because data is now taking over in terms of growth, in terms of consumption by consumers in the sector. So and I think one of the things that the committee would remind you of is that there has been a downward trend in voice tariffs since the interventions that the authority undertook in respect of the regulation of wholesale call termination rates. So since 2010 to date, those prices have been coming down, and we'll show the trend when we move on to the specific slides. The other important point I think which has already been raised in the presentation by the department is that part of bundled data tariffs are high when compared to the inbound rates. And I think when we talk to the prices that have been highlighted, we will be able to show the distinction between the headline tariffs which were highlighted vis-a-vis the effective rates that consumers actually pay in their consumption of data. I've already touched briefly to the issue of smartphone and tablet penetration. That is growing at a rate of about 30% per annum, and that also talks to the changing consumption patterns by consumers as they move more towards data-driven services as opposed to voice. In terms of usage, in terms of the data that we have, we think on average consumers use approximately 800 megabytes per month, but that is obviously increasing. You'll find that some use more, others use slightly less, but on the whole, there is an increase in the data consumption in the market. So the final point is just about what it is that needs to be done to facilitate or to enable the industry to provide data, and that talks to the need for the regulation spectrum. This is the slide that I inadvertently jumped to, but I think it's just to emphasize the point again, Chair, that smartphones and tablet penetration continue to grow. Overall, there is a decrease in the average effective price that's charged per megabyte as operators continue to compete for consumers. And then that decrease in the effective price is obviously offset by the exponential growth in data traffic. In terms of the revenues, we're seeing a lot of growth in data revenue. On average, in our view, that grows about 30% per year. And as I said earlier, the voice revenues, while dominant, will probably be overtaken by data revenue in the medium to long term. As regards sustainability, I think the key point to note there is that, as I said, while voice revenues decline, operators will be able, or the industry will be able to make up for the loss in the data revenue that they will gain. However, in order to sustain that growth, operators would need to increase their investment in infrastructure, as the growth in data traffic obviously will require a lot more increased investment in their networks. There are also other factors that are likely to affect around data prices. I think the key thing to note there is that between 2010 and 2015, there was a significant drop in the average price per megabyte. But obviously, that growth, that drop, when you look at 2015 and 2016, has not been that significant. I think the important point there is that between 2010 and perhaps 2015, there was at least a 45% drop in data prices per megabyte. Obviously, one could argue that it could be more, if the drop could still be increasing going forward, but I think that drop is where the problem is. The next slide provides some clarity on what the tariffs that are charged in the market look like. So there is a table which is at the top left-hand side of the slide, which talks to the in-bundle rate per megabyte for prepaid data packages, and then the lower table talks to the out-of-bundle price per megabyte. So, and the important thing to note here, Chair, is that the consumers that buy large volumes of POP data benefit significantly in terms of low in-bundle rate tariffs. So the bigger the data package that the consumer buys, the lower the price per megabyte that the consumer will pay. However, when you move out of bundle, then the rates that are charged then become significantly higher than those that are charged for in-bundle data consumption. And the difference is on average about 50%. So the graphs to the right basically just indicate that to some extent, depending on how much data packages a person purchases, the effective rate that a consumer could pay could go as low as 5 cents per megabyte. So I think data is obviously a volume-driven business, and the more you consume, the less you get. One obviously has to bear in mind that not all consumers would be able to buy upfront a large data package, and therefore that's a consideration that needs to be kept in mind. The next slide here talks to the prepaid voice tariffs, and I think the presentation by the department dealt extensively with this. So what I would like to highlight here, Chair, is that with regard to voice tariffs, there are essentially three types of tariff plans. There is firstly the flat tariffs, in terms of which the consumer will pay a flat rate irrespective of time of day and irrespective of who they call. Then there is the on-net focus tariffs, which would then be specific to the consumer's call on-net as opposed to off-net. And then there is dynamic tariffs which operate much assess the overall context for us to communicate and what CASA's proposed interventions or initiatives are. And I thought I would just highlight the issue of the priority markets. The department referred to it when they spoke to the policy direction on broadband. I'll talk to that in the next coming slides. There is also the issue of ICT industry indicators collection, because obviously regulation has to be informed. One of the things that CASA needs to pay attention to, and which we have started paying attention to, is the collection of up-to-date data on the industry. The other angle to the cost to communicate program is the call termination market review. Members would remember that since 2010, we had the initial intervention that was followed by subsequent intervention in 2014. The glide path comes to an end next year. We are now already starting another process to look into the cost in that wholesale call termination market in order to formulate interventions for the next financial year. And the other key angle, which is probably the most important, is the angle of consumer protection. So before I talk to that context, we thought it may be useful to also highlight some of the key cost drivers that needs to be considered as we grapple with the issue of cost to communicate. So we've categorized them into four. The first being the evolution of customer demand. I think I've already spoken to this, and the department has already spoken to it around the change in consumption patterns. The second issue relates to the introduction of new technologies. I think the point to make there is that obviously new technology is costly, but it also presents operators with an opportunity to be innovative in terms of how they provide services. So there's opportunity there to try and drive down the cost by operators to be innovative and therefore benefit the consumers. The other angle is around the quality of service. I think the point there is that as consumers become increasingly demanding, ever more higher speed, demanding coverage everywhere, and obviously we have to bear in mind that as operators drive to meet those needs, it will impact their costs. The last block there relates to the regulatory framework. And I think the point that one wanted to make there was around the fact that there is a bit that the regulatory and the legislative framework can do to support the broader ecosystem to reduce costs. And on this one, I think it's all about looking at some of the regulatory interventions and concessions that would enable operators to deliver services more cost effectively. So the issue of spectrum is obviously one of those inputs that if resolved would enable operators to do a little bit more. The other issue talks to the right of way and access to infrastructure. I think the department has already talked to it in terms of rapid deployment guidelines that need to be in place. The other relates to other economic costs, and one could talk there of the overall regulatory burden. But the point with that box is really about the fact that there needs to be some kind of give and take. So as the operators do their bit, on the one hand, to drive down the cost to communicate, I think from a regulatory and legislative perspective, we also need to be mindful of some of the interventions that we could make to make that process easier and seamless. The next slide really talks to the need for ICASA to discharge its mandate around the pricing of services more think I'll move to the next slide, which talks to the specific projects that we will be undertaking or that we are undertaking in the current financial year. So the first one is around the priority markets. And the purpose of this project is really to identify the specific markets that require regulatory intervention. And those markets would, in all likelihood, include specific broadband and data markets. So as regards this project, it's a project that started in the last financial year. We're progressing steadily with it, and we're hoping that we will have markets identified and necessary interventions undertaken in the next financial year. And this is the project through which we will deal with or rather respond to the policy direction from the minister in respect of broadband markets, which was published in March this year. The second aspect is the a collection of industry indicators. So, as I said earlier, one of the key things that we need to focus on is really ensuring that we've got up-to-date data to inform the regulatory interventions or any of the policy interventions that needs to be made. So, in this regard, amongst other things, we use the indicators that we collect to inform the publication of the state of the sector report. The first one was published last year. We'll be publishing another one at the end of the current financial year. But overall, all the information that we get will inform us as to the state of the market and what interventions would be appropriate to be undertaken to resolve some of the issues that are highlighted. I've already spoken to the call termination market review. We are now in a phase where the final year of the current regulation comes to an end at the end of September, and we're starting the process now to undertake the cost modeling and the studies to inform the next set of regulations that will be published. On consumer protection, we published the 2015 year late retail tax analysis report in March, and I think that's where the data for the current retail headline tariffs come from. We will be publishing the Q1 for the current financial year. The Q1 tariff analysis report will be published by the end of this month. And more importantly, the regulations that we came up with from the 1st of April of this year around the protection of consumers are being enforced to ensure that the transparency obligations imposed in respect of those regulations are adhered to by the operators. This is the slide before the final one, and on this one we thought we should highlight some of the key considerations that are on the table for us to consider. The first is with regard to international call termination rates, and here I think we just wanted to highlight the fact that we have received representations from the industry on what they consider to be the negative impact of the current call termination rate regime. And here the point about it is the issue that has been raised is around the fact that they are not able to reciprocate when they are charged higher termination tariffs by operators in foreign countries. So the long and short of it is when they terminate international inbound
consumers are provided with all the necessary information relating to their usage and what they are going to be charged. The second point is that the issue of expiry of data, I guess, has been highlighted a number of times and remains a thorny issue. And in our perspective, the most pointed and relevant legislation to deal with it is the provisions as set out in the Consumer Protection Act. And as the sector regulator, we are engaging with our counterparts at the National Consumer Commission to explore possible measures to address it. And that might involve amending the current regulations that are promulgated in terms of the Consumer Protection Act, or it might involve coming up with other guidelines or instruments in terms of the CPA to deal with the issue. The other issue is infrastructure sharing. On this one, I think I just needed to highlight that ICASA concluded a consultative process on the effectiveness of the current regulatory framework for infrastructure sharing. And we consider all the representations that have been received. And the one thing that has become very clear is that in the short term, we can perhaps strengthen the current facilities leasing regulations to enable those people who would like to play in the market but who have no infrastructure to gain access to infrastructure that the incumbents have. The obligation to these facilities is there. I think the issue has always been around how to enforce the current regulations to force the leasing on terms that are sustainable for players that are not infrastructure resource. In terms of the last point, I think I've already exhausted that point around the fact that spectrum is obviously a key consideration in this whole conversation, because it's one of the serious things across for operators, or it's one of the factors that can really go a long way in enabling the operators to reduce their costs. The final slide, Chair, I think just to emphasize again that voice tariffs are showing a declining trend, and in terms of what we have noted, the data prices are also declining. Perhaps the biggest decline, as I said, was between what up until last year, but the decline from last year to this year is probably a lot muted. So it could be better, but it is on a downward trend. We will also be investigating the broadband retail tariffs going forward, based on the outcome of the priority markets that we are undertaking. The collaborative arrangement between us and the National Consumer Commission will be expedited, so that we can then deal with the issue of the expiry of data. And finally, we will do our best to make sure that there's regular publication of industry data to ensure that consumers are informed. Just on a concluding note, Chair, I think for us, we welcome this initiative and this hearing, and I think we look forward to the outcome that will come from the hearings as we plan for the next financial year, because perhaps it will give us guidance in terms of what we need to prioritize in the short to medium term for institution to drive this cost to communicate program. Thank you, Chair. I'll ask my colleague to move across and answer all the questions.
Thank you very much for the presentation. We'll move through to getting comments, questions from members. I'm going to take one round on this one. So I'm going to note all the hands of the respondents. ICASA can respond at once so that we're able to catch up on our time. We still have one more presentation for lunch. So I'm going to make Honorable Ndongeni. Honorable Shin. Honorable Tudensi. Honorable McKinsey. Andrew. Okay, if I might not after Andre, say your name and then you tell me who it is. Honourable McKenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. The announcement yesterday by Wireless Business Solutions, or the day before, that they'd be launching a new 4.5 gig broadband network, and investing many billions, I believe, in establishing this network. Do you consider that to be a positively disruptive force in the market? And if you do, what can ICASA do, or what should the government do, in your opinion, to encourage this kind of development? Thank you.
Thank you very much, McKenzie.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you for the presentation. The one concern I have is I don't see that much being done in the actions. I agree with the Honourable Member. There's a general consensus that the cost of mobile data is quite high. I don't see very many actions to support addressing the high cost of mobile data. Also, is it fair that the guy with the red Ferrari is paying and that can afford 20 gigabytes of data a month is paying a lot less? 10% of the cost that a poor person can only afford 30 rand of data every now and again. Is that fair? And then my third question is just around, you know, you mentioned that the protecting the consumer is the most important. The Electronic Communications Act of 2005 has stipulated that a consumer advisory panel should be established, and that was promulgated in 2007. What is the update on the consumer advisory panel? We've been waiting for a very long time to be able to give input and protecting the consumer. So we'd love to know, you know, those obligations are still there and nothing has changed. But just now, 11 years, 9 years down the line, depends how you look at it. Thank you.
Prof. Gilbert.
Thank you very much, and thank you to ICASA for the presentation and the location of this issue in the wider ICT ecosystem. I just wondered if, in that regard, you could speak a little bit about your tracking of the costs, the decline in costs since 2010, and the flattening out of data prices. Basically, for 6 quarters, we've seen that they are static. In relation to the kind of investments we've seen in networks over this period, the next generation networks that have really been extraordinarily significant, and what the impacts of you know, higher regulatory transaction costs in terms of spectrum and the licensing of spectrum. So I'm particularly interested in the proposed prices for the high demand spectrum, which are obviously very attractive to Treasury, I'm sure, but are going to affect the cost of communications, whether the and how these would best be used to service the poor. I want to just flag another submission that's been made, that which there won't be a presentation on, which actually identifies the real challenges faced by rural communities, the premium they pay on services, the fact that many rural communities do not have competitive providers, if any providers at all, but in, where they do have single providers, it's a single provider. They're paying the premium on their airtime, which is brought out to the areas in which they're getting those services. And there's a real cost analysis, an affordability analysis, that I urge you to look at, because the national figures mask the real inequalities that exist for rural areas. And then finally, I just want to ask you to comment on what you refer to as the threat of OTTs, and which has been raised by some of the honourable members. I think there's increasing evidence now for the relief provided by OTTs to consumers, and I think some sort of demand-side analysis of what relief is being provided. At the same time, we're seeing a synergy that's actually stimulating demand for data, which people are willing to prepared to pay an enormous amount for. And I think what we're seeing in the evidence of in more mature markets is the dangers of traditional static efficiency competition regulation in these highly dynamic, disruptive markets, where instrumental traditional regulation could actually prevent, you know, or inhibit innovation and certainly investment. Thank you.
Gentlemen at the back, then you can introduce all that, you know, your name.
Thanks. would be really useful, and maybe this is something that Research ICT Africa can do, is to create a kind of a map of South Africa where we see what the affordability looks like in different areas. So a kind of graded map where, you know, somewhere in Mankosi in the Eastern Cape, perhaps there's only MTN and Vodacom available. They don't have access to the low data rates of Telkom. So we can see, expose the fact that a lot of people are paying 20% of their income to get 1 gigabyte. So a map like that I think would be super useful. My other question is around spectrum. So we all talk about spectrum crunch. And again, you know, the spectrum crunch is probably in the metropoles. And we really need to get a sense of how spectrum is being used. And it would be great if ICASA could look at a study where, again, we have a map of South Africa, maybe with graded colors, that show how LTE, 3G, maybe 900 megahertz broadcast spectrum is being used. So we can actually see where there is a spectrum crunch. You know, there are a lot of areas where there's not a spectrum crunch. And a map like that would be useful. And I'm sure the CSR would be glad to assist with a study like that.
Thank you very much for the comments. I think we really appreciate what has come through and the presentation from ICASA. From my side, I think the issue for me, COO, it's the limited information that is being provided. But I think similarly, when you say to us that there's a declining trend, I think I made that comment with the department. What are we comparing ourselves against? Because it can't be that we're just comparing ourselves versus the current operators who are here. Therefore, we can't have a true sense of what are we paying for or what consumers are paying for. The issue of and I thought that this was going to come as the discussion. For example, now, from what ICASA says is that prepaid data and voice tells showing declining trends. But everybody's complaining about the high cost of data. And these are users who are saying, but we are paying a lot of money. As ICASA, you are saying to us, no, the cost has been going down. What is the issue? Because maybe from your side, as the regulator, having done this study, they would have picked up currently what's coming through from everybody else and what are the issues. For me, that's something that is confusing, I must say. That I'm not able to compare properly the data that you are providing for us to say this is what we've been able to give you. The packages, yes, you are forwarding. I think the issue was raised earlier on around its prepaid. Is it better on contract, so that we can see who has a better option? It's those who can afford, who are able to get into contract, versus the poor who cannot be able to get into the contract. And what are the costs? What makes it cheaper? Is it truly cheaper in contract when we deal with data and all those things? And you know, there's something I thought that even from ICASA you have sort of tried and highlighted. Maybe we'll go into that discussion again tomorrow when we have the mobile operators. I remember one of my colleagues, I think some time it was a debate in the house, and when he raised the issue that why do we want people to sit midnight and make calls? Because it's affordable at midnight. So you have lesser costs at midnight rather than during the day. What makes that? And they were arguing, I can't remember what was the debate in the house, it was in the National Assembly. And they were arguing to say, but surely if you are able to do it at midnight, it says that you have the ability to do it. Then what stops you? Now, and they were talking around the issue of quality of life. To say, you are saying these families are not able to focus on each other. Kids are not able to sleep. Who are going to school in the morning? Because they must make this call at midnight, because that's what they can afford. So those are the discussions, colleagues, that one is hoping to get clarity on. We're talking to ourselves, but we must remember there's a society out there that is looking for answers. So while we're talking about these technicalities and technical knowledge, we must, technical responses that we give, we must be able to even respond to the ordinary citizen that is sitting and listening to this and saying, I am paying a lot of money and I'm hoping to understand, why am I paying this money? So I thought, let me just flag that to Ikasa, because I think you bear much of the responsibility. And one of the concerns I have, CEO, is your, let me see, I want to be sure, it's your statement where it talks about, Minister gave a directive in March, and you are saying to us, you're not going to do anything for the whole year. If I'm reading your slide correctly, you are saying you're not going to do anything with that directive. Please, slide 16. You're not going to do anything because that's what you are going to do in the following financial year, 2017-2018. Can you just explain why? Because that's what, unless if I'm reading that slide incorrectly. The second bullet talks about the project that has started and identified for the market. From my data during 2017-18 financial year, this project will also address concerns raised in the Minister's policy directive on broadband markets, March 2016. That for me is something that is very concerned. Maybe just clarify, because if indeed you are waiting for 2017, why are we not seeing anything being done this year, this financial year? Because by the time the date you were given in towards the end of the last financial year, unless if you are saying there's no coordination and conversation between the department and CAF, that you are not able to plan for this financial year, you can't have an instruction that sits for a year on something that is so important and critical. So that for me is really, really concerning. I think, yeah, those are some of the things that I'm looking at. That's fine. You can take at this point.
Thank you, Chair. And thanks to the honourable members for the questions. I think I'll start, and then my colleagues will deal with the other questions that I'm not able to deal with. So I think perhaps it may be appropriate to start with your question around the policy directive and why does it appear that we're not doing anything since the time that it was issued and we're only looking to do something in the next financial year. I think the nature of the work that needs to be undertaken, Chair, is such that it has to be detailed. So when you look at the projects for priority markets, what we are doing this year is that we have commissioned and are busy with a study on identifying all of those relevant markets. So what you will then see in 2017 is the actual outcome of the work that we are doing now to address the policy directive. So we will then gazette or promulgate the relevant markets to be prioritized for intervention in line with the policy directive following the study that we are doing this year. So I think that ought to have come out clearly in the presentation, but I hope that clarifies the issue, Chair. On the question that you have raised, Chair, around what we are saying and what people are experiencing, I think you put it very well that everybody is complaining that they are paying more, but ICASA says there's a downward trend, and who are we comparing ourselves against? I think in our slide, Chair, we indicated where we were 2010 versus where we were last year. I think it was just a simple analysis of looking at what has been the trend doubt that the prices can come down more. I think that the only point that we wanted to emphasize was that there is indeed a downward trend. Whether you're taking gross tariffs or whether you're taking data tariffs, the prices are coming down. But we can do more. And I'm not in any way oblivious to the fact that people are paying the pinch, but that there is indeed a downward trend. Whatever interventions need to come in will be more around accelerating that downward trend. I think the question as to is it better to be on contract versus being on prepaid, and why do I need to stay up at night to make a call cheaper versus when I can do it during the day? I think perhaps the operators will deal with that better. But if I may put my foot in it, Chair, I would say I think it's for the same reason that I have to pay to use the N1 from Pretoria to Johannesburg as opposed to using the R101. So I think it's just a question of congestion, and they will explain it better. So if I've got capacity on my network at a particular time and no one is using it, perhaps it's better to lower the rates and encourage people to use the network at that time when there is no congestion, when I've got spare capacity and I can make a bit of money, as opposed to everybody using the network when there is increased demand. But I think I'm putting it in a very simplistic way, but I think the explanation that they will provide will probably be much clearer. I think the other question that were raised relating again to the issue of data around how much prepaid data is lost through the expiry and how much do the operators really make from selling the data that's not used? Why does it disappear? I think, Chair, at this stage we don't necessarily have the data. But I think with the work that we will be doing with the National Consumer Commission looking specifically into this issue, we'll probably get a lot more detailed information around the practice, what involves it, that is why does it have to be there, and how much benefit, if one can use that way, how much benefit the operators have derived over the years through implementing it. I think my colleague will deal with the issue around are we able to verify the accuracy of the data that we collect and that we receive. On the question of OTTs, I think there is absolutely no doubt that from a consumer perspective, OTTs have introduced a lot of benefits. I think that the point around them being a threat, I think, was more in the context of the fact that consumers have taken up usage of those over-the-top services obviously means that the traditional services that they have used in the past and in respect of which operators have derived revenues have seen a lot more decreased usage. So from the operator's perspective, this is something that obviously divert revenue from their traditional services, and it is something that they would have to deal with. Either they're going to find innovative ways to embrace it, or they may try to discourage it. As to what regulatory interventions we planning to undertake on the issue, I think in the last sitting of this committee, specifically on OTTs, we indicated that this is an issue in respect of which we will take guidance from the policymaker, and from where we stand, the current position is that this is a new innovative offering, or it's an innovative market. At this stage, it's not clear whether there's any need for regulatory interventions. Perhaps we need to allow the market to evolve before we make any drastic interventions. Because if we run well as in the previous financial year, we have made a concerted effort to go out there, specifically to attend when we are invited by the respective executive authority, all the government individuals where Team DOC or Team DTPS is engaging with the public. You will find that our regional offices are there providing information to consumers on everything that we do. I think so that's one of the things that we're doing, making sure that our consumer liaison officers attend all the government visas as well as the related programs that are called to raise awareness. Linked to the question around consumer protection was the question that was raised with regard to the establishment of the consumer advisory panel. I think the direct response to that is that the panel was established some time back before my time, but there were challenges with how it functioned and we needed to revisit it. I can confirm that the regulations on the establishment of the panel will be published probably before the end of October. We will be publishing the regulations around the consumer advisory panel and establishing that panel to ensure that the consumer interests and input are taken into account in the discharge of our mandate. There was a question around the announcement by WBS of the rollout of a network, an LTE network. The question was whether this is positive, and if it is, what can government do to encourage it? I think that the response to that would obviously be that it is positive. I think the more players that enter the market, the better. That gives consumers a broader choice. It also lights the competitive fire against the incumbent operators. As to what government can do, I think the 18 DG spoke to a number of initiatives that are coming up, specifically around enabling operators to deploy networks. So the issue of the rapid deployment guidelines or interventions in that regard becomes critical for any new player entering the market and trying to build a network from scratch. But there is also the issue around enabling that new entrant, if it is a new entrant, to leverage existing network resources. So again, the issue of sharing and access to the existing facilities that the incumbents have also becomes important. And then finally, obviously, the issue of spectrum will always be a critical factor for any mobile player trying to enter the market. There were a couple of questions raised by Professor Gilwan around tracking of the cost since 2010. I think that data should be very accessible to us in terms of the tariffs that have been lost over time. So we've got that information and we've got detailed as a regulatory requirement on an ongoing basis. And she also raised a question around the regulatory transition costs and the proposed prices for spectrum, dots. And I think, Chair, I wouldn't want to get into that debate about whether the proposed prices are right or wrong. Suffice to say that they are what they are, and we believe that they are reasonable and they are informed by the analysis that we have done. And I think that's probably where I would like to leave it, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. I think for me, colleagues, for some reason, there's a question that was not answered.
Apologies, I had a question on the consumer advisory panel that, and if there was any more detail on what this can actually come to us.
It was. They gave an explanation that it was established, they found some difficulties, and therefore after that, what is going to happen, they're going to publish within this month the regulation that deals with it. It was answered differently. Okay. We'll move to the presentation from CSIR, led by Dr. Thomas.
CSR welcomes the opportunity to contribute to this vital topic, reducing the cost to connect in line with the targets of SA Connect, a plan which the CSR was intimately involved with colleagues like Alison Gilwood. And today I'd like us to cast our eyes kind of over the current controversial topics a little and look towards the future. I'm going to skirt over issues like DTV spectrum and high-value spectrum, and look at how we can use our spectrum more intelligently and efficiently to open up markets to more competition, expanding access to poorly connected areas and lowering the cost of access. This will resonate a bit with one of Mikasa's slides on using new technology to also lower the cost of access. So I'll be focusing more on data rather than voice, because this is where growth is forecast. Many people are talking about data doubling every 2 years, most people of video. And one can consider voice as just low bandwidth data, although that will open up a can of worms. I'm sorry my other CSR colleagues can't be here. So please go easy on the questions. I'll do my best. I'm just a scientist, not a politician. All right. So the context of the contents of my slide is I'm going to just quickly cover some of the background. Some of it's been covered, but I'll just cover things that haven't been covered. Look at the current status of cellular and Wi-Fi, and take us through a little bit of history of spectrum usage, and then move to this new area of dynamic spectrum access, and specifically TV white space, which we've been looking at, and offer some recommendations. I can just say that you have a document in front of you. It's really, that's the more detailed description of our recommendations. These slides are more kind of a summary that just highlights some of the key aspects. So if we look at South Africa's current household statistics, thanks to BMIT for these really great graphics, we're sitting at, it's a pretty good story to tell. 96% of our households have access to a mobile phone. And with internet access via phone, you know, looking at 38%, even if that is shared in the household. When we look at the individual statistics, we see that around about 60% of our population has cell phones. And what's interesting here is the split between feature phones and smartphones is around about 50-50. This is in 2015. The important thing to note there is that these smartphones have access to Wi-Fi, and that'll be important as you see my presentation moving along. Disposable income, the average is, this is from SARB, is 3,490 Rand, but kind of my comment earlier that hides a lot of what's really going on in the noise. So, you know, SA Connect targets of 5% would be 174 Rand for a gigabyte, but a lot of people, like I said, are earning 800 Rand under, so we need to take that into account. So the current cellular story is a good story to tell. I mean, most of our population is covered. 3G is around about 96%. Average speeds measured by Ookla, those kind of tests, are just short of the SA Connect targets of 5 megabits per second. Although one would need to interrogate the 3G coverage stats to see what people are actually getting at the edge of the reception of that 3G. We've spoken a lot about costs. So this is one measure that Research ICT Africa look at, which is the lowest 1 gigabyte data package you can get on, well, basically the prepaid or bundled top-ups. And they do this so that you can compare it to other countries. And you can see that the prices have come down. Actually, that, well, those people are spending close to 20% of their monthly income on 1 gigabyte of data. And with these stats, South Africa is still ranked about 16th in Africa, with places like Rwanda and Mozambique charging close to half the costs. So what we have, just going back to that, is really an affordability gap rather than an access gap. That's actually the gap we should be talking about more. The other great success story is a success story of Wi-Fi. So when one looks at the global picture of smartphone traffic, we see a huge amount of data being offloaded to Wi-Fi. In 2014, this would be higher now, 69% was offloaded to Wi-Fi. And there's an interesting study done by Richard Banky that shows that if you were to actually service that data with cellular, you would have to build up to 450,000 new base stations, investment of up to $93 billion. So Wi-Fi has actually saved a lot of money in terms of building out cellular infrastructure. The story in South Africa is also quite impressive. As of 2015, according to Cisco studies, 44% of the traffic was moving on Wi-Fi on smartphones. They predict a kind of marginal growth to 49% because mobile data will also grow pretty rapidly. But what's interesting is if you look at all traffic, smartphones, laptops, and any other kind of device, the growth of Wi-Fi will grow from 63% to 79%. This is an important story because this is where people are saving money. People are using free public Wi-Fi like Chai Wi-Fi and Trinet. They're using home Wi-Fi. I know a lot of students who hardly buy any data because they're using the university Wi-Fi for their data. And internet cafes would also be, you know, offering Wi-Fi to smartphones. So there's a lot of good stories of Wi-Fi providing low-cost connectivity. I mentioned Chai Wi-Fi, where there's 500 megabytes free a day. There's a great example of Wi-Fi providing rural connectivity in Zinzaledi Network Co-op in Mankosi in the rural Eastern Cape, where they actually built a local telco network over Wi-Fi, providing free local voice with outbound calls costing 50% of cellular calls. This is a place where people were spending 22% of their income on connectivity. And this will be mentioned later in the presentation, I think by Right to Know tomorrow. I often visit the small little northern Karoo town of Phillipstown because my parents-in-law live there. And whenever I go there, there's no 3G, there's only Edge. And fortunately, there's a WISP that provides access to this little northern Karoo town at a cost of roughly 58% of what a cellular network would pay for about 10 gigabytes of data. And there are many other stories of WISPs providing access. Wi-Fi is a good place to see the list of all these WISPs, around about 172 full members providing access around the country using Wi-Fi. The important story of Wi-Fi and where it leads to dynamic spectrum access is with a paltry 80 megahertz to notice is that most of our spectrum is exclusive use licensed. Only a few cases of rule-based access where you can operate in this band and share it as long as you obey a set of rules have occurred. But it has led to massive innovation and large successes, as you've seen with the case of Wi-Fi. So the point I'm trying to get across is that we still think about spectrum really based on kind of early 1900s thinking. number of houses or schools in areas where there's mountains or trees. The TV wide space link will give us additional capability to go further and penetrate through bushes and so on. So it's going to enable some of these WISPs to expand their access further and reach areas they couldn't reach before. We believe Wi-Fi is a proven technology to lower costs of access, and that providing dynamic spectrum access like TV wide space will simply amplify the success of Wi-Fi and lower costs even further. Where we see this in the whole ecosystem is that you will have open access fiber. This is our model actually we propose in the Eastern Cape broadband plan. Open access fiber to public facilities like schools and clinics, and then branching out from there with a mix of Wi-Fi, TV, wide space, or possibly LTE to reach sites around these hubs like schools and clinics. So it's going to lower the cost of access, especially the stressed municipalities. And we also believe it will create more local economy. We want to help these local WISPs in rural areas to be successful. So we grow these local economies in these rural areas rather than all the economy going to Santon. So where are we currently with these deployments? So in Africa now there are 9 pilots, including Malawi, Namibia, Botswana, Mozambique. South Africa has 2 pilots. There's regulation that's being completed in the USA, the UK, and Canada. Malawi has draft regulation, and South Africa has gazetted responses to a call for comments from industry. We had 19 responses, and if you need the gazette, I have the gazette number for you. That was published in June this year. The TV wide space trial in Cape Town was very successful. We connected 10 schools, achieved 12 megabits per second, which was better than the ADSL, up to 6.5 kilometers. And there was no interference, importantly, to any of the TV. And Cape Town was one of the most challenging areas to run a TV wide space link. Strangely enough, our trial actually helped influence FCC rules in the US. So they used our trial to improve some of their rules. So we see dynamic spectrum access as an inevitable part of our future, moving from exclusive access to a more shared access model. In fact, part of the 5G standard which is coming in the next couple of years. So I believe South Africa shouldn't play a passive role, but rather be early adopters and developers to influence and use the technology to expand access and lower costs. Our recommendations are first to continue to support this process to allow new spectrum management solutions, such as DSA and TV wide space. These are on a license exempt or occasionally license access basis where it makes sense. And also explore license shared access where is appropriate. We believe in supporting the entrance of new operators into the market, including WISPs, community networks, and cooperatives we will hear about tomorrow, especially those that can serve underserviced areas and ensure that they have access to appropriate spectrum at an affordable cost. Continuing the theme of spectrum sharing, and we've heard this from some of the other talks, we also believe that infrastructure sharing is very important. To support open access models for sharing poles, ducts, backhaul fiber, local loop, and so on. And also the connection of open access telecommunications infrastructure to hubs, such as public facilities like schools and clinics and libraries, in poorly serviced areas that these new operators can use to lower the cost of backhaul connectivity. And with that, I thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation, Dr. Johnson. I'm actually concerned about Dr. Johnson. I hope you still have some time. Can we engage with you after the lunch break?
That would be good.
Okay. Colleagues, we're going to break for lunch. for about an hour. It's 1 until 2. And then immediately we resume with questions and answers session and discussion with Dr. Johnson from CFI. Thank you very much, Dr. Johnson.